to the third case of the day, appeal number 06-1652, Mildred Baltzel versus R&R Trucking et al. Ms. Harrison.
Morning, Your Honors. I'm here to ask you to reverse the district court's ruling and entry of contribution judgments against Ensign Bickford, because Ensign Bickford's right to waive its work comp lien and dismiss those contribution judgments under Illinois law is absolute. Under the work comp system in Illinois, an employer must guarantee payment to an injured employee regardless of fault in return for a fixed schedule of payments and immunity from lawsuit. Illinois courts have infringed on this immunity a little by allowing third parties sued by the injured employee to seek limited contribution from the employer. In determining the parameters of this limited contribution, preserving the workers' compensation system takes precedence over any right to contribution, even when that preservation partially frustrates the right to contribution. One of the ways Illinois has limited the right to contribution against an employer is by capping the employer's contribution liability at the amount of the employer's workers' compensation liability. This cap gives an employer the right to avoid or to satisfy any contribution liability by stipulating to a waiver of the employer's right to seek reimbursement from the employee for past work comp for workers' compensation payments out of the employee's third-party recovery. Not one court has ever limited this right. Employers have been allowed to waive their liens and dismiss any contribution liability on the eve of trial, after a jury verdict, and after judgment. Employers have also been allowed to waive and dismiss even when the workers' compensation obligation underlying the waived lien is undetermined. The fact that the waiver could delay a third-party set-off is a result condoned by Illinois courts. Here, the district court erroneously refused to let Ensign, the employer, satisfy either the contribution verdict or the contribution judgment with the stipulation to waive its right to seek reimbursement from Mr. and Mrs. Baltzel. Three courts faced with the same situation have allowed an employer to waive and avoid contribution liability after a contribution verdict, even when the lien being waived encompassed undetermined benefits. The district court's order should be reversed and all third-party contribution judgments against Ensign dismissed or found satisfied upon waiver of its right to seek reimbursement from the Baltzels. It's a straightforward argument. Unless there's any questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
The appellees have divided up this argument, but I don't suppose it's based on the contribution percentages that you found, because Ms. Carstensen has allowed 8 minutes, and Mr. Riss is 2, and Mr. Key 5.
Your Honor, I heard in counsel's argument that she said three courts have allowed a waiver of a lien under circumstances similar to this case. My review of Illinois law shows that no court has allowed a waiver, or actually the Illinois Supreme Court has not ruled on this issue as to whether you can waive a lien when there's millions of dollars in futures workers' comp obligations outstanding.
Have not ruled on it, you said?
The Illinois Supreme Court has not ruled on
it. That's what I meant.
The case cited in their brief for this bold proposition that they now posit is the Lefevre case. And the Lefevre case involved a past paid amount of comp, and it was approximately around $200,000. They were allowed after judgment to waive that amount, and the court found no prejudice to the defendant because they got a set-off for that exact amount. There were no future comp payments at issue. That was not the situation that Judge Murphy was confronted with in this case. In this case, it's undisputed. In fact, Ensign Bickford was the one who presented at the trial of this matter in a hearing conducted by Judge Murphy that the value of their workers' comp obligation, I'm going to round these numbers off, Your Honor, because I'm not good at stating numbers. It was approximately $4 million. Of that $4 million, approximately $900,000 had already been paid in substantial benefits to this injured worker, who is severely injured. He's mentally incompetent. He has a permanent colostomy. He has to be catheterized to urinate, and he requires custodial care. So his damages were never disputed in the court below by Ensign Bickford, nor did they dispute that they had a substantial future comp obligation. What they did come in to court and want to do is to satisfy that obligation by waiving something that they never paid and may not pay. In fact, in chances are they won't pay. And in fact, they've taken inconsistent positions in the Industrial Commission. Now they're challenging their obligation to pay custodial care to this man. They're challenging their right to pay.
Is that part of our record?
It is part of your record. The documents have been attached both by myself and by Ensign Bickford. And I guess Your Honor could take judicial notice of those proceedings to the extent that they're relevant.
I just want to know where I had to look for it.
Yeah, okay. there's nothing in Lefevre that says an employer can waive their comp lien under these circumstances. Judge Murphy was fashioned an equitable remedy that provides for that there would be no double recovery to the plaintiff, that the defendant's right to contribution is protected, and Ensign Bickford really only pays the amount they agreed to all along was their liability. As I said, there's no guidance from the Illinois Supreme Court explicitly on this issue, but I believe, as stated in our brief, that their opinions indicate that they would follow what Judge Murphy did under these circumstances. Defendants have requested in the alternative that they be granted a set-off to the equivalent of the comp exposure, but again, that highlights why what Judge Murphy did was proper in this case, because even if we were to get some sort of set-off going forward as the workers' comp is paid, there's really no reason why the Ensign Bickford couldn't continue to object to paying certain future medical expenses or even ultimately reach a settlement which would deprive defendant of their right to contribution. Under the Contribution Act, that's not good faith. I looked at the Contribution Act this morning again. I just see nothing in there that requires the outcome that Ensign Bickford states, and the Workers' Compensation Act does not require that. Illinois, ever since Doyle v. Rhodes, has held that an employer is to be liable for their pro rata share of negligence, regardless of any immunity under the Workers' Compensation Act. Kotecki caps that amount, which Judge Murphy did in this case, to an amount based upon their past and any future obligations. We would respectfully request, therefore, that this court affirm Judge Murphy's decision. And the case will have to be remanded back for a limited remand, because I don't think that any of the parties disagree that some sort of set off to the past amounts that have been paid is required.
Mr. Ressus.
Thank you. May it please the court. Again, my name is Mike Ressus, and I'm here today on behalf of the other defendant appellees, Lufkin Industries and Freightliner. With regard to the pro rata allocation in terms of the oral argument versus a jury verdict, I'm asking for 2 minutes, which is roughly my 10% share of the common liability. I'm not that great with math, why I became a lawyer. Our position can be summed up as follows. If Ensign Bickford wants full value, it has to give somebody full value. It either pays the plaintiff $3.2 million on the workers' comp or it pays us the balance of the judgment with respect to its common share of the fair share of the common liability. And because it did neither of these things before judgment, the district court should be affirmed. Now, throughout the briefing and for the short time that Ensign Bickford's counsel addressed you this morning, we've heard them say that they have a right to waive the lien even after verdict. That, however, was not the issue before the district court. With all due respect to Ensign Bickford, the issue then as now was not whether Ensign Bickford could waive the lien, but rather whether it could satisfy a $4 million judgment for a waiver that was pennies on the dollar. The district court's decision was eminently fair. Ensign Bickford has now challenged that its unpaid Kentucky exposure is $3.2 million. That can be found on page 16 of its opening brief. Its payments, it owes payments equal to its Kentucky exposure, but under the district court's judgment, it will never pay a penny more than its Kentucky exposure. And when it does pay the judgment, it is entitled to a full credit against its future workers' comp payments. So the plaintiff can never, ever obtain a double recovery before the Industrial Commission.
What's the life expectancy of Mr. Skeeter?
Negative 2 years.
I'm not too sure. I think Mr. Keefe could probably answer that question better than I could. But I know that, obviously, I think it's less than 20 years.
He's got a catastrophic injury.
Yes, he has a catastrophic injury. And Ensign Bickford is obviously banking on the fact that he'll never live that long.
Right.
With respect to Ensign Bickford's position, it's been noticeably reticent about explaining what the full implications of its position is on appeal. It can't explain how the future workers' comp obligation is to be reflected in the judgment against it, yet it wants complete satisfaction of that judgment by having paid less than 25% of its Kentucky exposure.
Exceeded your contribution limit.
I'm sorry, and I join in the argument made by Ms. Karstensen, and for the reasons set forth in our brief, we ask you to affirm, or affirm as modified by only giving them credit for what they've paid to date, $900,000 or so. Thank you.
Mr. Keefe.
I don't know if Skeeter's going to make it to 81. He may or may not. It's hard to say. But the jury determines.
All things considered, you're not doing me any favors wishing him ahead.
Well, I mean, all things considered is that if he didn't have the will to live that he has to live, is that we'd be talking about a death case today rather than what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. This is an extraordinary man. And his injuries are enormous. And what I find curious about this case is the position that's being taken by Ensign Bickford. I've been a student of the Seventh Circuit jurisprudence for a lot of years. I don't think the Seventh Circuit typically takes lightly or suffers intellectual dishonesty. And that's exactly what we have here with Ensign Bickford's position. Now, Skeeter was horribly injured, and that's just a fact. And the fact that he's alive is probably a miracle. At the time of trial, Ensign Bickford never defended damages. Never defended damages. They offered no witnesses. They didn't cross-examine any of my witnesses. They didn't even make an argument concerning damages. At the conclusion of this trial is that they stipulated. They stipulated that their future exposure was $4 million. That was a stipulation. They agreed to that. Furthermore, they agreed that the present cash value of Skeeter's permanent total disability payments were X number of dollars. They stipulated he was a total permanent. And on top of that, after reaching those stipulations, is that they then also tell us in the district court that they want to satisfy that obligation by waiving their comp lien. Now let's go to what they did in the Industrial Commission. Is that in the Industrial Commission, they did the following. In the Industrial Commission, they took a totally opposite approach. In the Industrial Commission, when the matter was presented to the arbitrator in the Industrial Commission, Ensign Bickford stipulated in its commission order, Your Honor, this is a matter of record, and you can only take judicial notice of it, but it is part of the record. They stipulated in the commission order that they would retain, not waive, their 5B subrogation rights. Inconsistency number one. Inconsistency number two, they take the position in the course of this case is that they suggest is that they can waive future rights. In other words, they want to extinguish their contribution liability based upon workers' comp. Number two, on November the 6th of 2006, they stopped paying Skeeter and Ruth Ann their comp benefits, stopped them, which necessitated the filing in the workers' compensation case of a petition for immediate hearing and for penalties, at which point the reinstatement of the benefits occurred 4 or 5 months later. Point three is that after stipulating that he's a total permanent, is that then the case is tried before the Industrial Commission. The arbitrator makes a determination that he's a total permanent. For heaven's sake, is that if there was ever a total permanent, it's Skeeter. And on top of that, is that then what do? On appeal. They take the position on appeal before the Industrial Commission that he's not a total permanent. They take the position on appeal, and they put these issues at issue. Number one, they take issue with all of the medical expenses, saying is there a causal connection, is the charge reasonable, was the treatment necessary, is prospective medical care necessary? Completely contrary to what they stipulated to in front of Judge Murphy. Number two, they take issue with what is the nature and extent of Skeeter's disability. Completely contrary to what they've stipulated to with Judge Murphy. And then at that point is that they then file a brief in the Industrial Commission, and basically while they've said lots of what I think are dumb things, I'll just say the dumbest thing that they said, is that they said, again, the issue of nature and extent is in dispute. Respondent does not agree to pay permanent total disability benefits. Now, look, I don't know how you can talk out of both sides of your mouth. He's either a total permanent or he's not a total permanent. And here's the other question. Workers' comp defines the relationship between an employer and an employee. What we have here is an issue defining the relationship between a defendant and a third-party defendant, contribution. That's the distinction. And in this issue, where does the money go? There's no question that they owe Skeeter the whole verdict. Where does the money go? The jury heard the case. They determined his life expectancy, Your Honor. That was implicit in their verdict. They determined exactly what it was as it related to future medical. That's in their verdict. Anson Bickford stipulated to it. This is all a matter of question of where does the money go? Who's going to pay the money? They want to pay it in installments. Of course, they don't want to pay it in installments because they took it to the position before the Industrial Commission. Who's going to pay? Who has to pay? Because there's no question that the defendants are jointly and severally liable to Skeeter and to Ruth Ann for the entire verdict. So who's going to pay it? And the truth is that they have to pay it because the jury said they have to pay it. And it's been determined by the jury, and they stipulated to the amount, and there it is. And they've actually saved $150,000, which is the idea behind Kotecki. Because if you would have run the thing straight out, they would have paid an extra $100,500. Murphy cut the $100,500 right off the top. They agreed to the amount. Now they want to come in.
I bet you're an outstanding trial lawyer. But go ahead.
That last figure, though, that is based on 30% liability that they found on Ensign exceeded the compensation workers' comp.
Yes, sir.
So that's what this $150,000, whatever it is.
Precisely, Your Honor.
Okay.
It was great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. There is no intellectual dishonesty here. Ensign retained its right to its lien and to reimbursement in the Work Comp Act until it was granted the right to waive in the district court. There's no intellectual dishonesty there. Why waive? You're not going to waive a right here if it hasn't been allowed over there. Two, they never stipulated for purposes of the work comp obligation to any permanent disability. They're correct. My colleagues are correct. Ensign Bickford presented a declaration as to its potential work comp obligation for purposes of adjudicating the contribution liability. They objected in the district court. They told the district court, we don't think you have jurisdiction to do this. It's not been determined. But under Cheney, we're going to give you the figures because that's how it works when you're compromising these two statutes. The court determines the contribution liability by reference to work comp obligation, But as several cases have noted, that's not a determination of the work comp obligation, something this district court recognized in its own opinion. And the Industrial Commission has reinforced in its April 4th opinion, which is part of the record in our appendix on a reply. There's no intellectual dishonesty. With regard to some of the other points raised, I would point out that the three opinions I relied on were Kim v. Alvey, which is the First District, 2001, Branham v. Slezak, which is the First District, 1997, and also a Missouri Circuit Court opinion, Sadler, where from 2005, in which the court was interpreting Illinois law. In all three of these opinions, the work comp obligation was undetermined. It was undetermined at the time of either judgment or verdict for contribution, and the court still let the employer satisfy that contribution verdict or judgment with a waiver. The issue that is upsetting the appellees is the fact that Ensign's right to do this delays potentially their setoff or hampers it. That is recognized in both Branham and in Sadler that in those situations where the work comp benefit had not been determined, the court said we can't determine setoff. Employer, your liability, your contribution liability is satisfied. You're done. We now have to determine setoff, and we can't do that because the work comp obligation hasn't been determined. That's a fact that's condoned by the courts in trying to work these two statutes together. And at every point when there's a conflict between the two statutes, the Work Comp Act takes precedence. According to Lefevre, which is an Illinois Supreme Court, the courts will tolerate a result that partially frustrates, quote, the Contribution Act. In Kotecki, the court recognized the contribution right is only, quote, partially reserved, quote. And in Ramsey, another Illinois Supreme Court case, they said the Work Comp Act, quote, takes precedence, quote, over the Contribution Act. With regard to motivation, which has been thrown around as a highly sympathetic, Ensign Bickford doesn't dispute. This is economics. If they waive their lien, if they are not permitted to waive their lien and satisfy the contribution liability through the waiver, they're going to have to pay more. Maybe more because the ultimate work comp liability will be less. And so they'll be forced on the contribution end in paying the contribution judgment to pay more up front than ultimately they'll be found to pay. That's prohibited under Kotecki, but it could be a fact here. Moreover, even if the Industrial Commission eventually ends up with the same figure as the contribution judgment here against Ensign, Ensign will still be paying more because what will happen is it'll pay up front the contribution judgment right now. It'll be given reimbursement or credit rights against future work comp obligation. But when it happens that procedurally, that way, Ensign has to pay 25% in attorney's fees under the Work Comp Act to the plaintiff's attorney from any reimbursement or credit received. So this is a matter of economics, and that is a perfectly legitimate motivation. The Illinois Supreme Court in Lefevre specifically found that waiving your lien in order to avoid the 25% attorney's fees or to avoid contribution liability is perfectly acceptable because we are protecting the employer's right under the Work Comp Act to immunity and to a set schedule in order because the employer gives up so much. Finally, the test put forth by the appellees that the employer's right to satisfy contribution liability through a lien waiver should be based in some form on the amount of benefits being determined or that have been paid creates an impracticable test. It would result in employers' rights under the Work Comp Act being dependent on the fortuity of timing. If the Work Comp Act claim is filed late or early and a decision is reached quickly or not, it would also be dependent on if the personal injury action was filed early or late. This case is a perfect example of that. Here, at the time of verdict, the work comp action was pending and there was no determined obligation. By the time of contribution, there had been a decision entered determining work comp obligation. By the time of this appeal, Ensign Bickford, exercising its proper appeal rights under the Work Comp Act, appealed, and its appeal was successful, and we're back to an undetermined obligation at this time. That fortuity of timing should not be the test for whether an employer can waive and satisfy its contribution liability. Unless there are any other questions, I respectfully ask that you reverse the district court's opinion and dismiss all contribution judgment against Ensign Bickford. Thank you.
Case to be taken under advisement.